Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everyone. It is the Red Men Originals podcast on a Wednesday rather than a Monday because Steve refused to listen to me and booked it on a Wednesday. Steve, who is currently working from home, so good on him. But no, we couldn't go a week without getting those guys around the little coffee table here and having a chat about the Reds, particularly because we're about to enter into a massive period of season. This is it. The business end. We can finally say it. We're at the business end of the season.
It's a title race.
It is.
10 games to go.
That's it. We've reached the starters blocks. So yeah, across both podcasts today, we're going to be discussing that. Obviously Liverpool centric there on the Redmen Originals podcast, and then over on the Bias Football Pod over on redmenplus.com, we're going to be delving into City and Arsenal, and we're going to have a chat about the Nike England kit thing, because I've been fuming about it, and not in the way that social media has been fuming about it, but I've been fuming about it, so I thought it was worth us having a little natter around that before everyone moves on and forgets it was ever a thing. Before we crack in with all that stuff, a couple of things. First of all, I want to thank everyone who turned out in both Belfast and Dublin to see us live on Sunday and Monday, to sell out shows on another island. Was wild beyond comprehension. I'm going to show you a little clip. I've got a vlog coming out, so there's a little hint at that. Yes, we're all feeling a little bit worse for wear. Steve, though, is in the comments telling us that he is, in fact, working from home, which I would... contentious call to have the balls to say that you're working from home when you sat watching this. Now, he will come back and go, well, you know, it's my job, I work for you, blah, 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 blah. And he does consume a lot of the content, but fine. That's fine. Good to see you, Steve. I hope you're feeling better. Yeah, Steve pushed through with laryngitis. He's been an absolute hero for us in the last few days. So yeah, anyway. Boss, at some point over the next couple of days when I've got a chance, I'm going to be putting the blog together from that trip. So keep your eyes peeled for that. It's been a busy week for you two. Mm. So basically since I've seen you last, Chloe, you interviewed Diogo Jota. How was that?
Life peaked. I'm not sure it can get any better. It was boss. He came in and he was dead relaxed, really enjoyed it. And to whoever took the photos, I can't thank you enough, because I always think that photos are going to come out horrific, but I absolutely loved them as well. It was a moment that I'll most definitely cherish.
Amazing. And Dan as well.
Dan's interviewed everyone, not just one. He's interviewed the entire world.
You name him, I spoke to him.
Yeah, I mean, let's go. I mean, the ones I know about. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you both went and covered the Robbie Fowler.
Yeah,
mural.
Yeah, life peak there for me, by the way, being markedly older than Chloe. Generationally wise, my life peak, speaking to Robbie Fowler. What a man. And by the way, just on that, actually, like, the people might have seen the video on our YouTube, but he was just made up to be there all day. Like, he was just in his element. The mural, it meant so much to him. It was boss, it really was.
Yeah, and then you just went to watch the Pool Legends.
We did, yeah. And we were fortunate enough to speak to, you might have to help me out with it, Chloe.
Daniel Agger.
Danny Agger, yeah, that was all you, yeah, you cared about that.
Yeah. I was Danny, come on, lad.
Igor Bishkan, boss.
Yeah, lovely.
Yeah, Ryan Babel, likewise. Chris Kirkland. Aldo. Nearly Fernando Torres.
Fernando Torres.
It was just boss. It was just boss. There's somebody else I'm missing there, I'm sure. But yeah, it was amazing. Yeah, I spoke to Gregory Vignell since that as well. Mm-hmm. And just spoke to Jeff Shreve as well, which was interesting. It's been busy. It's been good, though.
Yeah. I spoke to every person in the Republic of Ireland and in Northern Ireland over 2 days, I reckon.
Yes, pretty much. Yeah.
I had a beer with all of them.
Yeah. You had a beer off every individual person, judging by your cartwheel attempts by the time we got to Dublin. If you haven't seen that, check our socials and tech. Dave LFC chats Twitter account as well. Good time had by all. Genuinely, I was going to individually praise you, but let's just do it in a more embarrassing forum online. I was very proud of you two this week. Very, very proud you did all that amazing stuff and I wasn't involved, which is an incredible thing. And we had a lot of like, where's Dan? Where's Chloe? Shouts when we were awake, which is quite offensive because, you know, we were right in front of them at the time. Are we not enough for you? The answer was no. Okay. Sounds. Thank you so much again. Yeah, to everyone who turned out. Mind blowing. And the idea, Chris, that there's more people coming to see us in Liverpool at the end of the season than both of those.
We will be there. Me and Dan.
These guys will be there.
They have to be there for that one.
Yeah, they're working the door.
It was something else. Like, it was proper humbling, wasn't it, going over there and just, I guess, pretty much when we arrived in Dublin, some fella shouted out of his van at us when we were crossing the road, like, and it was like, "Get in, red man," or something like that, as soon as we'd arrived, and then it just carried on, didn't it? It was amazing. Like, it was funny because we asked our taxi driver for a recommendation where we could have a beer and maybe a game of pool when we got into Dublin. He's like, "There's a place down there called Murray." He's like, "Sound okay." We checked in, put our bags in so we couldn't check in, walk down there, and it turns out it was the same gaff that we did our last live show in Ireland in 6 years before. It was insane, like, but we were in a different room and stuff, so it was hard for us to notice. So yeah, and the whole weekend was just absolutely brilliant.
Apart from we had a 10 to 15 minute spell in Belfast where all the audio broke, and we just got on, done the big introductions and everything, and then all the audio was dead, so I had to sing to the crowds with no microphone for 10 minutes to keep it going, which I wasn't 100% prepared for, but we got through. So it was brilliant.
Just after I failed to do my first one on the cartwheel, that wasn't it?
Yeah.
Did you succeed in any over the weekend?
No.
None out of
three.
None out of three. Sounds, yeah.
It's gone going. Well.
Yeah, it's gone well.
Anyway, speaking of taking stock, let's talk about Liverpool's season so far. Dan, I'll start with you. I haven't had a couple of weeks to sort of reflect on things. I think the annoyance of the Man United game has faded significantly, to be honest. I think seeing the response from their fan base, I've seen some of them calling it like the greatest game of their lives and all this kind of thing. And I get it, you know, winning late, in extra time against your most bitter rivals who are better than you at football would have that impact, certainly. I remember the 90s and noughties when we beat them, and those games felt massive. But it's helped me to chill a bit. And I think, you know, it's annoying not having an opportunity to win a quadruple, certainly. But I've been able to look at it and go, I had no expectations of Liverpool being even remotely this good this season. So to actually be here, as I said at the start of the show, we're at the starters blocks now for the title race. And that was beyond my dreams for us to be even at this point. So yeah, big end to the season.
Yeah, I'm able to have a similar sort of conversation with myself by this point. Don't get me wrong, I'd be lying if I sat here and said I wasn't just starting to really believe that the quadruple was a tangible thing that could happen, because I was. I think the more we got deeper into the season, the more we battled against adversity and found ways to win games, and just how brilliant we are, we just started to think, I'll tell you what, this could actually happen. Then the European draws happen, you go, oh, this is well on here all of a sudden. So to lose in the manner that we did, and we broke down the United game in detail in the immediate aftermath, but the fact that we were so in control of it, I'm going to annoy myself even talking about it now, but it felt like we could have put them to the sword and we could have killed it off in the second half. We didn't, so it does still stick in my craw a little bit. But having said all of that, you're absolutely spot on. Like, if you'd have said to me back in August, you're going to be sat here back end of March and you can still win a treble, you know, you're 10 games away potentially from winning the Premier League, you're about to embark on this epic title race, the Europa League still a very real possibility, I'd have bitten your hand off. Because ultimately, think back now, maybe I came into the season, given how far off we were last year, came in thinking, let's just have a smooth sailing ride to top four, maybe a cup run in that, and let's see what happens in Europa League, because you always kind of fancy us in that. I'd have been absolutely made up. So to see where we are and see what is possible is incredible. And obviously there's the romantic of Klopp leaving, all that sort of stuff. There's so many factors at play. Yeah, let's go and do it. And it's strap yourself in time, isn't it, ultimately?
I mean, Dan touched upon it there, Chloe. Considering just how we were rubbish last season. We were rubbish, and it felt like it was all sort of coming to an end. And now, look, we'd had another season that was a bit crap, an injury hit or whatever under Klopp, and then bounced back. But obviously having to go so big in the transfer market and actually suffer a couple of little setbacks as well, you know, a couple of transfers that maybe weren't totally under Liverpool's, you know, under Liverpool's, I guess, broader plan of what they were hoping to achieve. The Caicedo thing that was tucked in amongst there, the Lavia thing that was tucked in amongst there, and then yeah, to be kind of this good, and as well, actually, not even to mention the amount of like drama we overcame in the first 10 games of the season. Like, Liverpool had 5 red cards this season. That's like, you know, Arsenal have had 2, I think. You know, like it's unreal, genuinely unreal, would you?
Yeah, it is, and I think that's why I'm a little bit relaxed, because I just never expected us to get here, and. It's also a case of we know Klopp's now going, so I've got to enjoy absolutely every second of it.
Yeah.
And that's really what I'm here to do. I'm here to support the lads, get behind them, because now is when, if you come to Anfield, Anfield's going to be a light, because we know there's something at stake. We know there's something to fight for. We know that the days are twindling down for Jurgen Klopp at Anfield. So we're going to go even bigger for the players and the manager. And yeah, I would never have guessed that either being here. I had hopes of potentially challenging, but never did I think we could get close to Arsenal or City with the entire midfield rebuild that we've had to do. And on top of all of this adversity, you know, having a goal ruled offside in a game that was massive for us at the time, it's the fact that we've had massive injuries all along this season, and yet big players have stepped up and been heroes. You know, you've had Trent being grabbing us from the death at Fulham and getting us over the line. You've had Wataru Endo, who's been out on his legs at Chelsea. You've had the young kids stand up and prove that they can be world stars. You've had Conor Bradley, who's just decided to come out of nowhere and say, "Aye, I'm unreal." So I'm just enjoying it. I'm loving every moment on it. And to be honest, that United game, I needed an international break after that. I felt like I really did need time away from the football, and I've had that, and I can't wait for the Reds to be back. But ultimately, The thing for me is us being in not being in another competition might help us. I'm trying to see the positives. Yeah. That result, make sure you use that for the next time you go there in a week and a half. Go and make sure you use that, like, I don't even, deflation. Yeah. You use it as motivation to go again. You cannot be complacent at Old Trafford. And it's much more important that we win the game in the league than we did in the FA Cup. So for me, I'm seeing all of this as learning curves, and hopefully looking at the positives that we can take from them instead of the negatives.
Yeah, I think that's right. And there's definitely, no one likes to lose at Old Trafford, Chris, and it had the potential to really sort of pop a pin in what we were doing. But I remember at the time thinking about, like, well, there are definitely positives to take from it. There's positives to take from every situation, but it is how Liverpool move on next. We discussed this post-match. Like, we've lost the chance to take, you know, Liverpool to Wembley for the last game of the season, effectively. We've lost the chance to extend Jurgen Klopp's time as Liverpool manager, and that's devastating. You know, that is utterly devastating. That's like having, you know, the last 20 quid in your pocket, and you slip and you drop a few down the grid. You can't get to it. Well, we're going to have to shrug and crack on with what we've got. And that's what hopefully I can close right now, is that everyone's got that motivation to say there's, like, what, a maximum of, I think, 15 games left in the season. Yeah, let's just go and absolutely enjoy every one of them.
You have to empty the tank, don't you? You have to do everything you can to get over the line in all, you know, in the other two competitions now, in the Premier League, in the Europa. And just to go back on what Chloe was saying before, is it's a teachable moment there for Klopp. Yeah. You know, you've got to point at how you felt against Chelsea, and you've got to remember that, and you've got to remember how bad you felt at United, because that's probably the first time this season where I'm looking at it going, you know what, we were their better side against Manchester United, but there's nobody else to blame but ourselves that we didn't win that game. With the other ones and stuff, there's always been something, you know, the goal incorrectly being ruled offside and whatever. As a squad, this felt like the first proper defeat that they've almost had. Yeah. And, you know, it's the first time that they're going out of a competition this season, and, you know, we've got to make sure that we go the whole way in the Europa League and we don't take anybody for granted. You know, we do have the easier side of the draw, but everyone's got to be up for it each and every single week now. And, you know, hopefully with a few lads coming back, that'll bolster the ranks. But, you know, we're battle hardened. Like the young lads, Chloe mentioned it, Dan mentioned it, the young kids that have come in and been able to win us a trophy and put their name into Liverpool folklore and sort of history is incredible. But now you've got to go and do better. Yeah. Now there's bigger fish to fry, and we've got to go and, you know, hopefully, you know, we've got a big game against Brighton at the weekend. It's going to be a tough place to go. We'll talk about it later, of course. But we've got to set a marker down for this stage of the season early. That's what we've got to do now, and then take that momentum and just keep it rolling and keep building on it each and every single week.
What I would say is the only other defeat where I've felt horrific for it was Arsenal. But Arsenal was, it's just one of those days. You can have an off day. We've been absolutely superb for half of the season here. Manchester United was different because Manchester United, it looked like a team who just thought, we're much better than these. So we don't need that third goal. Yeah. And it was complacency to me. It was the feeling of, we just thought we were the better side and at some point we'd get that third goal. We didn't have the killer instinct. Where with Arsenal, it was just an off
game.
That's
why it's a teachable moment.
Exactly.
The scoreline didn't reflect the manner of the game at that point. Yeah. We had them at arm's length, just toying with them, thinking it was two or three goals clear, but it never was. Right?
And Arsenal just played us off the park, and sometimes that can happen. Sometimes you can have a bad game. You can excuse that at times. So yeah, it felt a little bit different, but ultimately, you've got to use them, all of that as learning curves, because like you said, now it's 10 games left to go. It's 10 games of Jurgen Klopp in the Premier League left. Go and win it for him. Go and win it for yourselves. Go and create history. Write your name in Liverpool history.
I think we get lost in the moment-to-moment of it all sometimes, you know, and the emotions of it all. And Manchester United exacerbates that. And it was funny. It was one of the central points of being over in Belfast and Dublin, and I think people feel that more acutely in other places. Sometimes people from down in London often feel it because you've just got more Man United fans actually in your day-to-day in your face and whatever, so it can feel more on top. Whereas I can be a little bit more laissez-faire about it, as much as it actually spiritually hurts me, because I just think there's just such a deep-rooted antipathy between Liverpool and Manchester in a general northwestern sense. But it's it is that the sort of context of it all, really, and how Liverpool, you know, bounce on and how we pick ourselves up. And to your point, I think, kind of, Chloe, is that, like, Liverpool have only lost two games in the league this season. Like, you used to be able to lose five was like, don't lose more than five. If you don't lose more than five, you've probably won the league. And now Liverpool have lost league titles, having lost one game in a season. You know what I mean? It's insane. So I don't know, obviously the United game is a cup game, which is right. It's disconnected from this. But actually, we put all this thing on like a quadruple. I've said this before. I just want to see Liverpool be good, and we've been really good this season. We've managed to pick up a trophy along the way. If we carry on being this good, I'd be astounded if we didn't come home with at least another trophy at the end of the season. The league is the league, and what I'm saying there is that it's almost impossible to win the Premier League these days. You know, City are on to become the first team to ever win it on four consecutive seasons, and we know why. They've got a platform to be able to do that. You know, there's 115 reasons why they're in these kind of sorts of situations. The only team that stopped them before has been us, and Arsenal pretty well placed, and I'm really looking forward to diving into both of those teams. But yeah, we forget sometimes that one defeat isn't the end of the world, but we've been trained to feel like one defeat's the end of the world. Whereas yeah, I'm pleased that everyone seems to be quite laissez-faire about the whole thing, because it's not to tell people how to feel, but you should feel that way, really, in this regard. Liverpool have been mustered so far. I want to talk about some of the individuals then. I want to know who you think are the players who've really risen to the challenge so far this season. And this can be from a number of different angles. The obvious one, I will do him and get him out the way almost, because we've done a lot of Virgil van Dijk chat in recent weeks, and rightly so, because obviously, look, he's won us a piece of silverware already. I think he's been almost flawless as a captain for us, but I think he's
almost like leading from the front. You know, we talked about like Jordan Henderson being very much that kind of like inspirational in so much as he's a guy who's going to hurt more than anyone else. He's going to shout more than anyone else. He's going to run more than anyone else. You know, maybe I don't like this whole like natural footballing talent, whatever, phenomenal footballer. Let's not mistake that. But Van Dijk is an all-time great of the game in waiting, and to have that, but also to be able to elevate yourself because you've been given the captaincy of a football club, I think is almost set the tone, Chris, for everyone else to follow in a way that maybe it was a bit stupid of me to not expect that, but yeah.
No, I think that there was not many people that thought he was going to be a fantastic captain. You know, and maybe that's on us, mm-hmm. because you get a sense of who they're going to be and stuff like that. And he's changed, you know, everyone's opinion pretty much because of the way that he's gone about it. You know, the leadership that he's shown, not just with the ball at his feet, but, you know, it's a simple thing. But before the game, getting everyone together and changing the way that he's doing, putting his own stamp on things. And, you know, you told us a while ago that you'd heard from inside the club that Van Dijk wanted to play in all the games, in all the competitions. And you had a theory around the... It was a Carabao semi-final where it's like, no, I'm the captain. It's a semi-final. I want to play in this game and stuff like that. So that's the type of leadership you want at a football club, isn't it? And on top of that, he's playing the best he's ever played as well. And, you know, it's a rolling cast of characters next to him.
Yeah.
But throughout it all, Virgil van Dijk has been imperious.
Yeah. Any other shouts?
Rising is a challenge, is this really more than anything? Yeah, yeah. I think Gustavo Endo falls into that category.
Yeah,
he's been absolutely exceptional. Certainly, when you come from a place of being a little bit underestimated and not really appreciated as a signing. And listen, you mentioned it earlier on. Obviously, went from the world of potentially signing Moises Caicedo for in excess of 110 million. Then you suddenly remove yourself from that, and it's Gustavo Endo, relatively unheard of, I think it's fair to say, from Stuttgart. You know, he's in his 30s already, 16 million. A lot of people are massively underwhelmed, and they go, "Oh, I'm not sure about this." But my word, like it's been said, he's waited his whole life for this opportunity, and that's clear to see. But not only that, and you can take away although isn't it nice, what a story, he's been just brilliant, like absolutely exceptional. Like he's taken to the Premier League and this football club like a duck to water, and I've been so pleased, so impressed with him. Far exceeded my expectations, I'm not afraid to say that. He's been brilliant and a real sort of cornerstone and a real linchpin as to why we've been so successful. He's allowed those around him, obviously we've seen Lexi McAllister, who falls into this category as well, by the way, but we've seen him do a job at the six. I think it's fair to say he was good at it, don't get me wrong, but having Gustavo Endo come in and say, "No, I'll take care of this, you go and do your stuff," has just allowed him to be incredible.
It's a joy to see someone doing things that they clearly really enjoy doing and doing it well for your football club. And sometimes
like, playing fetch.
Well, yeah,
you know, go get the ball.
But it's like you can watch videos. There was a roundup video of like great Ronaldinho moments that I saw on Twitter this week. And what I loved about Ronaldinho was how he played with a smile on his face. Yeah. He just loved football. Endo's got that, but on the different end, it's like he enjoys being in a scrap. Like he enjoys going shoulder to shoulder with someone.
There's a big smile just before he goes shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah. I had a hunch he might buy the gum shield, to be honest. But on that. That note, though, you are absolutely spot on, and I love all that grit about him and that gnarliness.
So much more, though,
but he's so much more, and again, more fool me for not thinking he would be. Mm-hmm. I thought he would just be this little ball, like go and win it for you, and he'll put a foot in, and then he'll give it to you. He's got loads. He can play, he can pass, he's chipped in with goals. Wonderful, wonderful.
Can I drop a shout in there for Joe Gomez, please? Because I just don't think Liverpool would be where they are this season without him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, we've had problems at left back, we've had problems at right back, we've had problems at the six, and Joe Gomez has stepped up on each and every occasion. He's played centre half as well, added into it. We just wouldn't be the football team we are without Joe Gomez this season.
And there was a lot of people last summer who would I'd had enough of Gomez. A lot of people. Yes. And we look, because ultimately, I mention this often, there's always two to three players in any squad that you assemble that are just at any given point on outs with that subsection of fans who need to have someone to hate or whatever in the team. But Gomez has had his time as that. And I think, you know, there were concerns whether he'd ever get back to the level, you know, that he was in the title-winning season. That spell from, like, November to January where he's partnering Van Dijk, and it's the best defence we've had, basically, with him in there. But, because, you know, football's moved on again,
And all of a sudden, he's found new life at fullback, which is just, yeah, I agree with that. I think he's been,
It's struggled to find the player. I think he's had more of an impact, to be honest with you, other than maybe a Mo or someone like that. And he's rising to the challenge, isn't it? And that's what he's done this season. He's just been so impressive, so impressive in every position, man. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Another player who I think is an unsung hero is Harvey Elliott. I think he has been unbelievable for us because we obviously know he's maybe not the first name on the team sheet, and his height at times can be the reason why he's not. But when he's being called upon, he's being immense. He's, you know, won us games, the likes of the Palace game where he just grabs the game by the scruff of the neck. He came on against Wolves, was unbelievable for that. And then in a period where we were on our last legs and it was like, we've got no other choice but to start, he was doing 90 minutes, 120 minutes, back to back to back to back. He was on his last legs. He was hitting the deck after the full-time whistle time and time again. And yet, 3 days later, you were thinking, no way can he start this game, and he'd go and put another 90 in for you. He just gives everything. He gives every last bit into the game and for the badge, and he clearly adores playing for his boyhood club. And yet, even though he's maybe not being as pivotal or being in the starting 11 as many times as the likes of Joe Gomez, when we've had to call upon him, he has risen to the occasion. And he's came on and he's very much had the attitude of, this is my club. Am I Hecla and us drop points here? I'm going for everything under Jurgen Klopp. And he's helped us get over the line in many games. So
Another one as well who's had dissenting voices along the way as well, I think it's fair to say. And he's transformed a lot of people's opinion about him, I think, as well. Not just, you're absolutely spot on what you say, Chloe, but it's not just that desire, that work rate, that endeavour, that's all there in abundance, of course, but loads and loads of quality as well on the way, like just absolutely bags of it. And he's come in different positions as well, similar to Joe Gomez. So I've been made up for Harvey Elliott this year.
20 years old.
Frightening. Over 100 appearances now for Liverpool.
How many goals? I think I read, I don't want to get it wrong, but I heard it's like 20 goals and assists across England and Liverpool this season.
Goal country, I think you might be right.
That is ridiculous for a 20-year-old.
And a naughty, filthy Mabona volley into the mix as well. Shouldn't be allowed.
Let's stick with Harvey Elliott for a minute. Yeah, I mean, 10 goal contributions in all comps so far this season. I think the goals need to come a little bit more still from him, but this is the thing about Harvey Elliott. I am judging him by like 24-25 year old standards, and that's so not fair. And it's just because he's been with us since he was 16. And also there's that little thing sometimes of, because he's not come up through the academy, that, you know, he was a signing, and we've had to deal with him being in and out and watch him sort of grow along the way. I don't think he's ever underperformed really for Liverpool. I think he's always broadly impressed for us. You know, he broke his ankle early doors in the season a couple of years ago, and manages to come back in and play a role in that as well. So to have that, and you mentioned that, to have those appearances and have that kind of return so far, having missed a huge chunk of a season when he was, you know, I mean, this is the lad who did a season on loan at Blackburn. Yeah. And, you know, we've done this for so many years, Chris, where we go, you recognise signs, and let's be honest, the signs normally when you send a player to the Championship on loan is like, see you later, mate. You know, you haven't got what it takes. He went down there, was one of the best players in the Championship, came up, and he kind of hasn't, you know, even then breaking his ankle when he comes back, he hasn't actually looked back. He only seems to get better and better and better.
No, and, you know, it's one of those games now, isn't it? I think Jürgen's seen it this season where you do need your squad more than ever, and he seems to be the best substitute we've got. In many ways as well, because I don't know whether he watches the game and he thinks about what he's going to do when he comes on the field and stuff. So even if he's only got 10 or 20 minutes, he's going to empty the tank of those 10 or 20 minutes, and you know, you almost know he's going to have an impact. And it'll be interesting actually to see how many goal contributions Szoboszlai has had over the course of the season in comparison to him, because we talk about Szoboszlai in such glowing terms, and there are sections who wonder what Harvey Elliott has done.
It's basically almost the flip reverse. It's 11 for Szoboszlai, 7 goals and 4 assists to Elliott's 3 goals and 7 assists. Mm. Yeah. But it's interesting, isn't it?
One's the signing of the year in most people's eyes, and one's, God, he's still here.
Yeah. No, it's true. And I just think it's a great, again, another one is 3 years older, captain of his country. And, you know, to that point, and I feel like I talk about people's height a bit too much on this, but the point is, Szoboszlai's like 6'3" and he's lightning quick. He's got these physical attributes that, you know, and there's not, you wouldn't
you would choose to have them if you could, particularly at the Premier League level. So Harvey Elliott, you know, you've truly got to be exceptionally gifted if you haven't got all of the physical tools available sort of to you. And yeah, I agree. I think Harvey Elliott's he's just great, isn't he? And it goes back to Chloe's point, Liverpool fan.
Yep, that matters.
Yeah, it really does. It really does matter. You know, sometimes you can ask people to go and empty the tank. It's difficult for anyone to do, but obviously, if you're bought into the cause, then you're just going to do it. You're more likely to do it. And Elliot, he's been bought into the cause since he was basically born. So getting to see him do that for Liverpool is an absolute thrill. I've seen there was a good shout actually in the comments here for Alexis McAllister. Mm-hmm. Now, it's interesting because he's a new signing. So I think there's a little bit of a, you know, we've done Endo already. So I think it's fair to continue to mention them. He was brilliant for Brighton. I was a little concerned, Dan, that we might not ever get to see the Brighton Alexis McAllister. You know, when he was doing a good old job at number six, we were all buying Andre in January to play in there, maybe give him a little bit more space. But everyone else seemed to be flourishing in the eights, and there was no opportunity for him. And then we've moved him in there, and he's just been, oh yeah, that's an absolute superstar.
Yeah, I was with the masses on that, to be honest with you. I already. My stone wasn't cast on him. I did think there could be an opportunity, but I did wonder. When Szoboszlai was really flourishing and he did hit the ground running, you think, okay, that's what I expected from McAllister. Why hasn't that quite happened? But yeah, more fool me, because he's grown into it. He's a slow burner or what. But he has been, I've said it a few times on various different shows and podcasts in the past month, it feels like now, maybe a little bit longer than that, to be honest, 6 weeks. Everything good about Liverpool recently has had McAllister's fingerprints on it. He's just been exceptional, absolutely exceptional, maybe defensively, in the attacking sense, goal contributions-wise. He's been brilliant. And he's another one who feels like he's really sort of stepped up and risen to the challenge. We've spoken about some of the key players that missing. It's almost as if he's looked around him and gone, oh wow, like this lad's not there anymore, this lad's not there anymore, I need to really start to show it now. And he's done it and some. He's been unbelievable. And I knew we were buying a brilliant footballer, don't go, of course, I'd have seen him a lot for Brighton, seen him in the World Cup, of course. He's far exceeded my expectations again. Like, he has everything. Like, not just from an attacking centre foot. Maybe he's a bit of an eight and he's not. He's everything. He's a complete midfielder. He's a complete package. He does a lot. He puts his foot in. He's physical enough when it matters. Quality in possession, quality of passing. Really intelligent as well. He knows how to operate. He knows how to position himself. Wonderful, wonderful footballer. And for 35 million, my word.
Silky footballer. I mean, I look at him and I think of Thiago instantly, just with the way he moves about a football pitch. And I don't think, if you look on TV, you probably don't see that, because you don't see the way he glides across a football pitch with and without the ball. And the United game, going back to it, he was one of the only players who I really came away from that thinking, my God, no one can moan at you. He's just unbelievable, technically brilliant. And like you said, that it's not just it. I think him playing the number six position has really helped him in terms of getting closer and winning the ball high up and being able to tackle people. But it's also the way he uses his body to make sure he protects that ball. It's the way he gets out of tight spaces. He always finds the pass. The pass has always got the right amount of control and weight on it as well. He is an absolute superstar.
That assist for the Nunes goal as well. Oh, yeah. It's like the vision to even see that as a possibility, but then to be able to execute that is just out of this world. Like, that can't go under the radar. That's phenomenal.
And like, you think about how Brighton played, they're so different to how we play. You think, oh yeah, they have the ball and stuff, but Liverpool move the ball from the defence to the attack so much faster than any of the other top teams. There's a massive period of adaptation just involved in that, because we quite often do skip the midfield, and yet we never skip Alexi McAllister. Mm-hmm. We always find a way to get him involved. So actually, a part of it is, how do I get on the ball? Where do I need to be able to influence this game? It's not like Brighton, where there was two of them and everything was ran through those two and out and stuff like that. So it does just take a little bit of time, doesn't it? And he's done everything to an incredibly high level, to be honest with you. Can I just say, though, a shout out here, because I think it's easy to forget about some of the injured players and stuff, but Kurt Jones.
Kurt Jones.
Yes, I mean, like, there was a time where he was the first midfielder on the team sheet, and he's got injured and we kind of forget about him, but we should not forget about him. He was brilliant this season.
Yeah, I can't wait for him to come back, genuinely. You're right, there's tons like that. Because we were talking about, obviously, Conor Bradley's been a big topic of conversation for us in recent days.
But like, there's going to come a point where some of these lads are going to come back in, and there's a chance they might come in and be even better. You know, like Curtis Jones could come back and having had a little bit more time to analyse it, come back with even more fire in his belly. You know, you could get it. You could get an even better performance out of him. Trent Alexander-Arnold.
I'm expecting Trent to come back in and have some fire in his belly. Like,
100%.
Going to need to.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah. Great comment here actually from Dave, who says the time where we were all hyped for Andre, Kefren Tehran, Manu Kone seems like years ago now.
Right.
Done it though, you know, and it's funny to think, isn't it? Like, again, you know, the stress and strain around that transfer window, you know, and Endo's just gone and eased that so much, of course. And obviously, you know, we don't want to laugh at someone else's misfortune, but you know, Lavia's been confirmed out for the season. He's played a handful of minutes for Chelsea, but there was a point where we were all in on him, where we had to be, because that was the only guy who was left on the market, seemingly 50 million quid for a teenager who'd done a season, half a season at Southampton or whatever. And then we've you know, trusted the process. They've gone out and they've brought these lads in. Just unreal. There's tons, by the way, and thank you to everyone who's sending comments in. Quansa, a couple of people here, Oliver Uday there, and Chris Dobson both saying,
I mean, Kelleher's a shout, by the way.
Yeah,
Kelleher's another great shout.
Given what we perceive to be the drop off from Alisson to Kelleher, and there's no disgrace in that. Alisson's the very best in the world, but given what Kelleher had been showing, or the lack of what he'd been showing, I think it's fair to say previously, I think we were all a little bit like, oh, this could be worrying, but he's been absolutely exceptional in recent weeks.
The problem is, with a question like that, it literally could be the entire squad, because to get to where we are right now, to be the level of consistency to keep up with Manchester City and Arsenal, you have to have pretty much everyone being at their top level all season. You can't carry passengers when in this league, when you're going for a title and you're going against Manchester City. So, you know, absolutely anyone could be in
I'll
that.
Give you a random example of that, who no one will have thought about. Joel Matip was having a brilliant season. He was having a brilliant, and again, he's another one we're like, we've squeezed every drop of football we're ever getting out of Joel Matip's body there, and he started the season, he was keeping Konate out the team, he was keeping Gomez out the team,
he was man of the match until he put it in the back of his own net against Spurs.
I'm going to do one, and again, because it's a podcast and we can't go a podcast without talking about the most box office player at Liverpool Football Club. But I saw this tweet from Cy Brundish, a friend of the show. He said, Darwin having a great year, all comps. Salah, top three all time great Liverpool player, and Suarez is the best player ever to play for Liverpool. And he's pulled together a chart of best individual season for LFC. Now, obviously, the current season is still going on, but in terms of minutes per goal and assist, currently Salah is second only to Luis Suarez, is 13-14. In third place is Salah's 17-18. You're getting Rush's 83-84, and then Darwin Nunes beneath that. And you know, it's Darwin. I think the longer we have him, the more we'll come to accept, you know, what he can and what are you going to get with him. And ultimately, he's going to miss chances because centre forwards miss chances, but hopefully the more, if he continues to do all the other stuff, Chris, we'll probably come to realise that even the best people miss things sometimes. Because I half jokingly said I'd pick him over Haaland on a Saturday Social a couple of weeks ago, because I love the emotion of football, and I just find him thrilling to watch. But a year ago, it was a bit, I had it described as being a bit Everton, of like this agent of chaos thing, like we're clapping and chanting for this guy who just comes on and doesn't score goals or get assists, but he runs around loads and you know, and looks quite energetic. Well, he's in danger of becoming the complete package. He's stepped up in a huge way this season.
Yeah, he has massively. I think he's my favourite Liverpool player and the player I hate the most at the same time. he's divisive to say the least, isn't he? And you know, I lost my head with him big time in November, December. I was like ready to give up on him completely, and since that point I've just been blown away by what he's been able to do. And you know, there are players out there who've had absolutely incredible careers, who've won pretty much everything, like Raheem Sterling. Actually, we were talking about him last week, weren't we? But you know, he can't kick a football, can't score a goal, but he's scored loads of goals over the course of his career. And I'm not comparing him in the way he shoots to Sterling. I think Nunes is 10 times the finisher that Raheem Sterling is. But players, there are brilliant players, and they never, like Ronaldo, he averages 7 shots a game as well. He scored loads of goals, but he missed probably six a game. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There are players that just do that, and Darwin Núñez seems to be one of them. And I'd much rather have him for us than against us. And that's a big compliment, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. He's just, box office is the word for me. I just think he's absolutely thrilling to watch. And, you know, and I'm going to cut a lead this on to, you know, almost what our title / Europa League ambitions hinge upon. You posed the question to us before we went on air about, like, if you could choose someone to stay injury free, who would it be? I've been looking at the goal output from some of the other teams, which again we'll go into more on the Bias Football Pod, but having Mohamed Salah fit is huge because he's the best player in the league in terms of attacking players. If you can have Darwin Núñez continue to perform at this level along Mo Salah, performing at Mo Salah's level, then we're a frightening prospect, because I don't think anyone else has really got that level of a two-man sort of quality that we have. So Darwin for me is just so central, because I think you can't guarantee Jota, Dan, as much as we could. You know, I'd love to have more Jota, and hopefully we get to see a little bit of him before the season's out. Diaz, I think, has stepped up brilliantly as well in terms of physical output as much as anything else. Gakpo's left us a little bit to be desired. But yeah, you know, if we can keep Darwin and it continues on this sort of vein.
There's no two ways about it. Like, he's made himself absolutely imperative. He's made himself a real sort of talismanic leader of the front line. And I think you're right. I think there's definitely been times this season, now is probably one of them, whereby he's one of the first names on the team sheet because of the way he leads the line and the goal contributions he gives. And not just in terms of his goals and assists, but what he offers the front line, more generally speaking, as well. We often say he's a nightmare for defenders and all that sort of stuff, but it rings true. And also it's the magnitude of the goals he's got this season as well at times. Like, he's come up with big winners. We often speak about Diogo Jota in those clutch moments. That's why we love him so much, because it tends to be the case that his goals matter. They mean points more often than not. But Darwin Núñez is guilty of that as well, in a positive way this season. We've seen, obviously, the Newcastle winners, the Forest goal we mentioned earlier. So, yeah, I think Darwin, Salah, both of them, clearly. But my third pick would be Diogo Jota.
My first pick would be Diogo
Jota. Just because, in terms of the front line, solely speaking there, just because, again, I come back to it, it feels like when the moment comes and you want the guy in front of the goal to score you the goal that matters more than ever, it's Diogo Jota, time and time again.
Honestly, I think it'd be cheating. If we could get Jota back for the rest of the season and keep Salah and Núñez fit, I think we piss to be honest.
It's the lack of care for how big either a moment is or the game is with Jota, because he's not asked. Ultimately, he does not give a single shite, because this could be the most important moment in a footballer's career. And it's like the most normal thing in the world to him. Nothing fazes him. And that's
still
why...
Still a goal.
Exactly. Yeah. When you're looking at a run-in, maybe it's the FIFA thing. When you're looking at a run-in and how big some of these games are going to be and how big some of these moments might be, that's why immediately my mind turns to Diogo Jota, because he doesn't feel like he's affected by anything, any circumstances. Darwin Núñez, we know he plays on emotions. He's quite raw. He's passionate. I love all that about him. But could he be influenced by the situation? Possibly. Salah, not really. Doesn't really matter to him. But Jota's the one.
If we're in another one of those final game of the season moments and you want something to drop to someone, Jota, right?
It's the fact of, if you have Jota in both that United game and City game, I think we win both. I think it's that simple. I really do. I think if it's just Jota on the end of one of those chances, it's a goal. Like, that's just the way I see it. So he's a massive, massive miss for us. And the quicker we can get him back, the better, because he is the most lethal striker we've got. And it's not just that, but he's got a bit of a shithousery about him that I like. He's so calm, nothing affects him. But if you get under his skin, he'll run with it. And I love that as well.
Yeah, definitely. So, look, in terms of, like, what's going to get in sort of our way, how are we feeling? What's our strengths going ahead? What might give us a bit of a stumble trip sort of moment? What do you think?
I mean, injuries, right?
Yeah.
Injuries.
Biggest concern. Mm-hmm. Them are the refs.
Yeah,
sure. The PGMOL
genuinely
tried the best.
Yeah, no, I'm confident. I am. I'm genuinely really confident heading into it. Like, I mean, there's obviously, you know, obstacles to overcome on the way. There's no two ways about it. A couple of fixtures in there, you look at it and go, I'm not sure, but that's the same for all of us. And we've got the the kindest running, I think it's fair to say. But in terms of us centric, yeah, with our firepower coming back now, we spoke about injured players getting back involved, we've just strengthened the bench and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, it's all there for us. There's no two ways about that.
There's the now well talked about four back to back away games looming, including Europa League. I think there's still a chance we might get one of them moved if
West Ham.
The West Ham one.
Yeah. But Atalanta away to see out the quarters of the Europa League, Fulham away, Everton away, West Ham away feels like
it's a big old
defining.
Yeah. I mean, and again, we're a little ways away from it, so I can say things like, I'm glad that it is not Arsenal away, City away, Chelsea away, Tottenham away, or whatever in that run of fixtures, yeah. to be fair. That's definitely one to keep an eye on. The thing I'm actually really looking forward to in the next couple of weeks, because we'll have a clear picture before we even get to that, Chris, is it's the next Manchester United game, because I don't know. I'll see how I feel as we get to it, but my immediate reaction as that game finished through the week was, I just feel like we're just going to go and absolutely smash them next time. And now, I was reasonably confident ahead of the FA Cup game. I don't feel like I was totally underserved in terms of Liverpool's level of performance, whatever, in that game. Maybe the finishing. I'm eager for them to continue to feel really good about themselves, yeah, until that game.
That's fine. Like, I mean, we've seen it already this season. We've been on the receiving end of it with Arsenal, obviously, haven't we? With, you know, beating them in a cup and then obviously going and losing in the Premier League and stuff. It does happen quite often like that anyway. Yeah. I think the biggest problem that we had during the game against Manchester United, I don't really think we got to grips with their man-to-man barking. Mm-hmm. As much as we were toying around with them and stuff, I think that was the biggest problem for us. I imagine that Pep and Jurgen Klopp will now be able to absolutely put that to bed, yeah, and be like, lads, this is what you should have done. This is how you go about it. And I don't think
we got used to the trolley dash of like kicking the ball over their midfield and being completely in on their 18-yard box. I still think the James Shaw, it's like being poor your entire life and then someone, yeah, you go, here's a trolley, here's HMV, fill your boots. You wouldn't know how to live.
Well, like, to be respectful to United for a change, they created far too many chances against us as well. Yeah. Far too many, like 20-odd shots, was it they had?
It could have
like
been
that.
3-0 to them.
Score
before.
Four, Kelleher made a couple of big saves.
Yeah. So we weren't, as much as we did toy around with them far too much, they were a lot more in the game than I think Liverpool fans realised.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to bash them next time.
Well, no, but this is the thing about it. This time around, we both play in the midweek beforehand. We play Sheffield United. They play, I think they play Chelsea before they play us as well. And might even be at Stamford Bridge. I'll double check that. I think that feels like one that's going to be hyped up. And I've just got my gut feeling on that is that we're probably going to end up. And look, there's a lot of football. More injuries can drop on your plate in that spell of time before then. But that's a big one for me because I think that's going to be billed as a real pivotal sort of, you know, moment to be hinged on. And weirdly, you know, having mad games against like Fulham away and the Merseyside derbies, you know, another weird one for us as well in that, and even West Ham, where they can be kind of tricky fixtures, and feel like Man United will almost do their own heads in to some extent because there's now a huge pressure almost on them to repeat
defeat.
Yeah. Whereas I don't think it's a repeat. I don't think what they did is a repeatable feat, at least of all, because they beat us in extra time. You know what I mean? We lost, but we didn't lose in a normal time football match.
No, I don't know. I don't feel that. It's Manchester United at Old Trafford. They came to Anfield and they got a draw out of us. Yeah. We've gone there and they've beat us. So
definitely own one.
Right now, I think, look, like you said there, they caused us so many problems. The deep runners from midfield that Liverpool just weren't tracking. We couldn't get to grips. They were all over us. We probably could have been 3-0 down by half-time, but Liverpool won a ball high up the pitch with Bertardo Endo and Salah was offside for Endo's goal, but it woke us up.
Yeah.
And you saw the best of Manchester United and they just got tired at one stage. But what they did was for a large part of that second half, they recharged the batteries whilst also being able to stay within grips with Liverpool. Liverpool could have put that game to bed, but they didn't. And Manchester United just saved themselves to then be able to really put the foot back down. it's Manchester United at Old Trafford. And let me tell you, yet they've got, is a Coventry in the FA Cup. So the FA Cup's massive to them. I totally get that. But making sure Liverpool don't win a league title, like, that could also be what their season comes down to. And they'd absolutely love to do that. There'll be more want and there'll be, you know, a decent atmosphere with the fact that it is the league. So I'm just trying to not be complacent. I'll worry about it when we actually get there. I think we've got the much better side, but just having the much better side doesn't guarantee you anything in this game. So for me right now, I just hope we don't get complacent and we actually put one on them, because we've been a little bit too respectful.
They play Chelsea at quarter past eight kickoff on the Thursday. We're going to absolutely fucking battle
when
them.
When do they play in the FA Cup semi? Is it the 20th or something like that?
The 21st of April.
Do we all play that week? Like, is it just...
It's a full calendar.
So can we go 3 points ahead with City having a game in hand?
City's game, I think, is Tottenham that weekend. So that's obviously been moved for their Chelsea game in the cup.
Right.
So I think City have still got two... Well, before I went to Ireland, they had two games that were in the calendar. They might have now put them back
in. It's just Spurs that isn't in the calendar. Yeah. But so us and Arsenal can put 3 points on the board and then they're okay.
It's interesting stuff there.
This weekend too.
And the Europa League, we touched upon it, obviously. But Atalanta, be interesting to see how we handle that. It's certainly, the fixtures are placed in the more dramatic fashion, as much as you always want to come back to Anfield and have the second leg at home. There is also something to, like, that real drama of going to someone else's gaff like that. Beating Barcelona and knocking them out at Anfield was the greatest Anfield night, but also booking a place in the Champions League final in the Stadio Olimpico was also a pretty good thing as well. And obviously it's only the quarters, but yeah, how Liverpool get through Atalanta is going to be important to what we do there. I like the idea of Benfica or Marseille in the next round. I prefer the idea of Benfica just because I don't want to go and die in Marseille. That would be preferable for me, if nothing else. But it's certainly encouraging. But I think that I think you're right, Chris. Injuries are going to determine what happens here. How many people can we get back, and can we keep more? Can we keep a net positive from here on in? You know, people are going to be injured. That happens. Football. There's always players injured at football clubs. But can we reach a point where when Trent comes back in, he stays back in? Can we reach a point where, you know, Canate's back and he stays in for the rest of the season? Jota would be another one. Jota just feels like he'd be the biggest win ever, but I think you're dead right. That's going to be it, really, isn't it?
It has to be, for the way that the season's gone. But again, Jürgen's learned so much about the sort of fringe players in the squad that I think there's just a lot more trust that, you know, maybe we were guilty of rushing a couple of players back. Obviously, Salah comes in and re-aggravates. Trent Alexander-Arnold comes in and re-aggravates an injury. Was Canate's a re-aggravation as well? I can't remember if that one was or wasn't. But
I don't think so, no.
Well, he just that many. He probably did re-aggravate something.
From 5 years ago.
Yeah, maybe. If we can take one step back and two forward in injury terms, I suppose that's what you're saying,
yes,
isn't it?
Absolutely.
That's what we need to do. Just keep adding players to the squad. I feel confident that that's the only thing, to be honest, that can stop us. Yeah. But also... City and Arsenal have had their own little setbacks this week, yep, haven't they, as well? So, you know, it's not just injuries for us. Maybe the injuries could be a positive.
Well, watch Kyle Walker start this weekend.
I don't think John Stones will be.
John Stones, fine, really good. Saka, though, he went home early. He'll be absolutely fine.
What you've just said there has already been started, been borne out, because obviously Ryan Gravenberch was back on the bench for the Man United game.
I forgot about
clearly
that.
Clearly, we kept him wrapped in cotton wool because we weren't quite sure. And instead, the trust was placed in Bobby Clark, which is what you've just said. Testament to how much we've learned about these fringe players now, and that little bit of extra caution maybe could stand us in good stead for what's to come.
Are we excited?
Yes, buzzing. Absolutely buzzing.
Cannot
Can't
wait.
Yeah, really, genuinely.
I think the international break has helped me so much as well, though, because I feel like, do you remember when we were on for the quad and I just felt like every game I wanted to die because it was just far too emotional. I was far too invested. I feel like I've had a nice little 2 week break where I have not cared about England or any other international breaks.
100%. Just Scotland.
Just Scotland. And then I'm ready to go again.
It's been a nice palate cleanser. It really has. I agree with that. I mean, sometimes you get... And this has been the most pleasant an international's break's been ever been off the back of Liverpool losing a game of football. And that goes to my point about the Manchester United thing, is that we seem to have compartmentalise that, pack that away pretty quick. And look, if that needs to be a blip, a one-off, use the positive, use the springboard to really push on for the rest of the season and not the beginning of the end. But that's on the lads to perform. You know, I feel ready for it. Brighton, very excited.
Yeah, I wonder how the international break would have gone had England not done the update to the kit, because it's sort of galvanised us in one direction because of the gammons and all that, hasn't it? Where it's like, normally there'd be fume around something else, but everyone's just laughing at them.
Absolutely. Yes, we will be discussing that over on the Bias Football Pod after this podcast. Right, we're going to take a break. When we return, we're going to be doing Liverpool versus Brighton as the real stuff returns on Sunday.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Just a quick public service announcement. If you're the kind of person who whitters away on voice notes, just stop it.
It's brilliant because you go, hey, what was I going to say? So, and then it's like 20 seconds of that before they say
stop
it.
Stop the recording. Cut.
Start again.
Cut. Take two. Fucking hell. Stop wasting my time. Waste your own time. It's changed my mind since I discovered on Android, you can just put it to your ear and you don't have to play it to the fucking world. So I'm a little calmer about them, but it is that general sense of, I've got to find time in my life to put aside to listen to a voice note. Whereas it takes nothing for me to read something. My reading age is all right. You know what I mean? I can glance through that, but it takes you more time to type that text out. Again, that's your time. You take your time, not my time. Anyway, no one has even done it to me lately. I've just listened. I've just seen Chloe doing this, and that's one of the fucking great. Ooh. Anyway, poor old iPhone users. They can't even put it to their ears. Anyway, let's just do this for the rest of the show. To be honest, I've got a lot of residual anger left in me. I'm quite tired and quite grumpy after not had a lot of sleep of late. But anyway. Just to bring back the energy from part one, I am excited for the return of the football. Liverpool versus Brighton. We're playing, Chris, for the right to enjoy the City versus Arsenal game. Oh, I think, yeah.
Yes. 4:30 kickoff for them, is it? It's just after us.
We won't be anywhere aside from in a queue outside Anfield.
And we watch it on our phone in Chris's car, probably waiting to get out of the traffic, whatever. Whatever. I've enjoyed some good games on the radio.
Honestly, I think that game's going to be so interesting to watch because I fancy Arsenal to do something in it. And I don't know if that's good or bad for us anymore. That's a crazy thing. It's like, do we want to draw here?
Yeah, I really do.
It's crazy.
Draw Arsenal, City win. In that order.
Yeah.
Draw Arsenal, City win. Yeah, okay. So, but no, on to Brighton for us. It's just being able to put that marker down. It is pivotal in a title running who plays first on the weekend than it always has been. Mm-hmm. You'd rather a day before much rather a day before. You want them to stew on it a little bit. But equally, when they're in the dressing room about to go out and they just hear that Liverpool have scored a last minute winner, that's deflating as hell as well.
As fans, I think that's actually a player thing.
I think it's
well.
A player thing as well.
I but honestly, I think that either one or the other, I think it's either a last gasp winner. So like, because you want it. There's like body chemistry involved here, you know, like, and how you react to stuff, because there's no way they won't have one eye on it of like how Liverpool are getting on. And if you go, oh, Liverpool are losing, that gets you up. Or, you know, if Liverpool are 5-0 up, you know, and maybe you switch off to it, I don't know, but there is definitely something in that. And when we've been in these situations before, what Liverpool have done, well, they've put it brilliantly when we put, you know, so much distance between us and City, the one time we actually did it, was that thing of like, you make it academic and you make it such that I'm going to have to go out here for 95, 100 minutes and give every egg of energy that I've got, and the best I can hope for is that we're going to be second.
We'll be 20 points behind.
Yeah. You know, and that's the beauty of playing first in the running, is that the best you can play for is to...
Where you were.
Be exactly where you were. Yeah, exactly.
The other thing is, I don't care what you say, it has a massive impact on the stadium, because if you hear about what everyone was saying about the Etihad for that game, where I think if we would have scored minutes earlier, they'd have been even more crap. But Villa had completely silenced them. It was the players on the pitch that got them the title. Yeah. It wasn't the fans who galvanised them.
Yeah.
Everyone who spoke about it, commentators, have said the nerves inside that stadium, like, people were just getting angry because you feel like you've lost it. And the players on that day, Manchester City decided to Gundogan just decided, aye, lads, it's me. But it definitely, you know, if they're going into that game, Liverpool have just won, and things aren't quite going your way in the game, the stadium is a massive thing. If you don't have your fans, the correct kind of fans who will really back you inside the stadium when you need.
Definitely. I this is the thing for us. It's and the good thing about playing first is that's all you. That's that you ease that from the flip reverse. I don't have to think about that game until ours is done. You know, again, it goes back to the end and the right thing. Dan, we haven't beaten them at Anfield since 2019. It would be nice if we put a swift end to that, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, essential. Bit of a bogey team, really, aren't they? Not just at Anfield, team, whoever we play them in, whatever competition in recent times, to be honest with you. Can't quite put my finger on why that is. I mean, Leandro Trossard was a good old reason for a little bit there. Obviously very good side. A little bit kryptonite, I think, for what Klopp wants to do in many ways. Certainly De Zerbi's style and stuff like that, I think that's not helped. But Potter wasn't too dissimilar, and De Zerbi's just kind of Potter plus, rather. He kind of added goals to them, and they were a bit of an XG buster for a while, but I think he's kind of he's broken the shackles somewhat. But I'm more confident heading into this game than I have been in recent Brighton fixtures for a lot of different reasons. But obviously what it means being one, the fact that it is Anfield despite the record you mentioned there. But I think Brighton have become a little bit inconsistent of late. We've seen, obviously, was it four they got beat by Roma recently? They've been shipping goals. And when you look at the firepower we possess and the way we can put teams to the sword, I think I am relatively confident heading into it despite that. And yeah, bogey team. But again, another reason, all the more reason, to go and really sort of do a job on them and put them to bed quickly if possibly can, because what they have got is they have got spirit and they have got proven track record of hurting us. So let's kill all possible hope early.
If anyone wants a very small thing for the superstitious amongst you, the last time we beat them at Anfield in the league, we won the league. That's easy.
Excellent.
So there you go.
There's also the Anfield thing with the Ergen stuff is massive, isn't it? Obviously, we're going to have a maximum of eight home games, but seven of them being at Anfield because I'm classing Dublin as a home game. That is not a lot of games to enjoy Jürgen Klopp on the sidelines at Liverpool, is
not
it?
Enough,
funny enough, I got an email last week from someone in America who's like shitting themselves about not being able to see Jürgen Klopp on the sideline at Anfield, and I think they've paid whatever they needed to pay to get themselves in, because it's a dream for them to go on and do it and stuff like that.
One of the guys who sits by me at the grounds basically said, he said, like, again, like money, but also the whole, like, the effort it goes, and, you know, and the emotion you've got to pour into supporting your club home and away, and he just kind of went, I'm just going to get every possible ticket that I can, away games and all that kind of stuff, that stuff he wouldn't normally have done, because he just feels compelled to make sure that he sees as much of that as possible.
The other thing is, I'm so sorry, but that Arsenal City game, City Arsenal game, is massive because it means that, look, a draw is what I want here, and if a draw comes out of that, Liverpool can capitalise. It's a chance for Liverpool to capitalise on either of those teams. So that Anfield crowd's going to be up for it even more. Yeah. And that is vitally important as well.
Yeah, and that's it. This is the thing now. There's good games and bad games at Anfield. And look, this any game can be anything, I think, you know, depending on how the game sort of goes. But hopefully now, I talk about it before, but like that whole thing of when your fixture list fits on one screen, you know, you're in the running. There's like light at the end of the tunnel. This isn't that November slog where you're playing every three days and it's just, and nothing really matters because you can lose group games and then you can draw league games and still be there or thereabouts. This is it now. It's like some of us might get to all of those 15 games. Some of us might only get to the six or seven. You know, some people might get to one or two, whatever it takes. If you're the kind of person who's in the hunt to go to all of them, you're probably the kind of person for whom that's not a lot of games left. Mm. Either way, no matter what it is, it's not much. So actually, for me, I'm looking at going, Mike Summerall's come at the end of that. I can do that. Now, but this is the
50-odd days, I think.
Yeah.
But also, like, if the weather turned as well.
Yes.
Do you remember the 13-14, and obviously it didn't end well and all that type of stuff, but the coach greetings for every game. Like, we're about to enter that stretch, and we just didn't get to do it in 19-20, did we?
That is it, yeah.
It is going to turn into a mad party.
I would not expect you to say that. You're so right.
Yeah, like, I've not actually thought of it that way, but I actually haven't been in this situation before. Like, I haven't. Like, we've won it, but I wasn't there. So yeah. I have not been the last 10 games when a Premier League is up for grabs in terms of actually being able to win it. Yeah, we came close twice, but I've not been there for when we've actually won it, when I've been able to have, like, an impact on these last 10 games when you feel like you're winning it. Yes, that is a good point, though.
And the weather.
The weather.
Honestly, the weather's massive.
It's more ass on the weather at this point. It just needs to start raining.
We need to start getting in shorts and getting down to meet the coach.
Yeah, I mean, not shorts for me, but a Greek at Hotel Anfield in the summertime.
I'm not getting into shorts, but I'm going to get into a Greek.
What part of Yamas and all that? The weather's huge. They say about warm weather training as well, like preventative injuries as well. So who knows?
Oh, beautiful, definitely. I love all of that. And they don't have that in Manchester or London.
No, the
weather won't turn for them. No. Rain every day.
It's interesting. I can make a case for any sort of outcome on this and how it's positive. The most positive outcome is just going to be a win for Liverpool. You know, I can spin it anyway after the fact, but there is a little part of me I would love us to just put a display on here and really just, you know, particularly because we were so profligate at Old Trafford before the international break, like the goal difference thing. It's a thing right now. I don't think goal difference is to be concerned about just yet. It will be maybe as the season sort of wears on a little bit closer, but it would be lovely to take a huge chunk out of that and actually put down a very imperious performance and then go to City and Arsenal, go ahead, kind of follow that, see how you get on with it. Let's talk about the 11. Just as a quick aside before we do, because I don't think he's going to be available for this one, maybe, but Joseph Clark says, is it too late in the season to put Trent in midfield? Just think we'd be stronger with him there and Bradley and Joe at right back. The issue is, I guess, Dan, is like who's available, who's going to be coming back in for this one? Mm. And Trent's forever thing is, you know, McAllister's now finding his feet as an eight. Endo's finding his feet as a six. You know, Curtis Jones is going to come back in at some point. To Bosley, Elliott, Gravenberch back fit again. You know, look, if Trent's good enough, then he'll get in above all of those lads, of course. But I'm personally just looking forward to seeing it right back, doing all the things that he's brilliant at, but more, and going, oh yeah, that's why.
Yeah,
that's why.
That's where I fall down, to be honest. My initial thought there was, where does he get into that midfield? Because you're right, we've spent the first half of the show waxing lyrical about nigh on all of the midfielders that we possess. So I find it hard. And it's still a little bit experimental, ever so slightly, him in midfield. It feels like, you know, it could be wonderful, but there's very much a lot of hinging on the could be there. So I'm not quite sure about it yet. He possesses everything it takes to be a brilliant midfielder. There's no two ways about that. But we haven't really seen it in fruition yet. We haven't seen it in its fullest. So I'm not sold. I'd still be having him at right back. And I made the point earlier on, like, Conor Bradley has very much staked the claim to be the right back from now until the end of the season. But then Trent comes, and Trent's this incredibly gifted generational footballer. So ultimately, it's kind of a nice problem to have, let's put it that way. And I think there's a world whereby Trent does 60-70% of the right back stuff between now and end of the season, and Conor Bradley just drops in and out and shows us how brilliant he is as well. That's perfect to me.
Might need
just,
Gomez at left back just, as well. The moment
just
with
to play devil's advocate on it, because I do think it is interesting, is there were games when he was the break glass solution and we did put him in midfield earlier on in the season.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me if we had those moments during the next 10 games where that
if he
is,
goes into there.
Yeah. If we just go, shit, something needs to happen.
Yeah.
Let's just put him there and see what will happen, because he can shoot from absolutely anywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
We did it earlier on in the season.
I agree with
what you were saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there are times when everything matters, where I think we might.
There's no big start games in there, personally.
I agree.
I think your point is right in that we've almost forgotten that we've spent a lot of time in the season going, okay, well, let's put Gomez at right back and it'll be Bradley at right back now. I think if we're chasing the game, Trent goes into midfield and then you take Endo off or something, and all of a sudden, and you've got Trent, McAllister, Szoboszlai in midfield three with Conor Bradley flying down the right-hand side, which there's, I think there's a lot of extra training that's going to be required if Trent wants to be a six or whatever for Liverpool. And we've got an abundance of lads who play in the eights already. So that would be it's more like you should use what you've got. That would be mad, I think. It feels like the Trent midfield thing is actually the next manager's problem.
Oh, it's 100% the next manager's problem. And it's going to be started by a big knock on the door by Trent.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it might not, but it might be the other way around. I was thinking Rafa Benitez comes in, and what's the first thing he does? He makes sure he gets on a conversation with Jamie Carragher, Steven Gerrard and Michael Owen, and he manages to convince Gerrard and Carragher that it's all good. Michael Owen, he can't. Mm-hmm. And Michael Owen's out the door, and we might find something similar happens sort of this summer with some of the players.
I was saying to someone over the weekend in Ireland, like, you know, you see Xabi, let's say Xabi Alonso is the next Liverpool manager, just looks at him and goes, you can do everything I did.
He just kicks the ankles a couple of times and goes, midfielder.
that obvious? Yeah. What the fuck have you been playing right back for? You're a midfielder.
Yeah.
Simple.
No, 100%. Okay, let's pick an 11. Anyone? Does anyone know anything more about who might...
Curtis Jones.
Canate's.
Canate,
Gravin Birch can obviously play.
Yep.
Darwin Nunes expected to be in contention for Brighton.
Invested Darwin Nunes at that.
Yeah.
Invested one.
I think Trent was looking at Manchester United to be the game back. Jota and Alisson Becker sometime in April still, so they were the only ones that.
Mbetetis has obviously had a little
Mbetetis April.
He had a bit of a glow up as well, that lad. Have you seen a picture of him? No. Not skipping leg day. It's my calf. Word. I've never seen a calf like it.
I thought it looked like it was popping. It looked like it was a problem.
You do, aren't you?
It looked like it had popped.
Do we think this is like that time when Klopp said this, when he came in and Gomez had been out for like with his cruciate and they looked at him and he'd just been in the gym, so he had like beach muscles because he was bored and to do something. Oh, yeah. Budget has just been, what can I do?
Just working on his right calf. That's all he's done.
Calf raises for the last 8 months. It's scary.
Have you seen the picture? It's ridiculous.
It is. It's frightening. But him coming back at some point would be nice as well. But yeah, make it about right in terms of the injury update and the injury front. Yeah, sounds about... I haven't thought about 11 for so long, by the way.
So let's think about it then. So it's going to be Callaghan in goal.
Yeah.
It's going to be Gomez left back, do we think?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would say so.
The Robbo injury doesn't look great.
But then Tsimikas in this conversation as well. But I would imagine it's Gomez.
I'm not, it's Gomez.
Van Dijk and Konate.
Yeah.
Bradley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Endo McAllister.
Szoboszlai.
Yeah.
Curtis Jones off the bench.
Diaz, Nunes.
Salah.
Easy peasy.
Look at that.
Good
side there.
That's a fucking good side, that, isn't it?
Is there no bone of contention around the left back at all for anyone?
No.
There isn't even a conversation.
It's weird,
isn't it? And look, hopefully it's just a precautionary thing for Robertson. And it doesn't look good because he's almost crying on the pitch, isn't he, when he gets hurt. You know, that pulling your shirt up over your eyes thing is not someone who's as hard as Andy Robertson, you know what I mean? But the fact that Virgil van Dijk walked off at Goodison Park, so I'm very wary of this as a thing. On the Michael Owen visual pain scale, when I saw him walking off, it didn't look more than a couple of weeks at most to me, Andy Robertson.
I can get on board with that.
But there is some, but I was also thinking about this, about like Bradley's been brilliant and Gomez has been brilliant and Robertson's been really good since he came back in. I want Gomez on the pitch as much as possible for the rest of the season. And it's strange how that sometimes happens, isn't it? That if Robertson's back and fit, I think he probably starts more games at left back than Gomez does. Bradley will eventually make himself unbelievable.
I've been having these dark thoughts late at night that involve Trent at left back. And right,
have you been on James Alcott's Twitter account?
No. Okay. Why has he been saying that?
Apparently so.
Has he, yeah?
Has he, yeah?
Why?
No, I haven't. And that actually opens it up, doesn't it? Robertson, Gomez, obviously Robertson injured. I don't know, like, Conor Bradley's been so exceptional on the right that if you want Trent in midfield for spells of games, where's he going to do it from?
You're just getting him on the pitch at that point, aren't you?
Yeah.
Left back. In some manner.
My word, if you got Conor Bradley and you got Trent and you got Endo and you got Szoboszlai and you got McAllister.
Yeah.
How the hell do you stop us?
Yeah, you don't. Must okay. have Jota back as well. It's interesting. It is, but my point on the Gomez stuff is, it just feels like this has just been his season. Mm. And I worry for him being sort of pushed to the periphery a little bit because of Andy Robertson's experience and left foot and the Conor Bradley, you know, emerging to some extent. He can't score the league winning goal if he's not on the pitch, is my general point.
Experience is the word on that, sorry. Yeah. The quality in abundance, of course, world class operator, no two ways about it, incredible servant, brilliant left back, etc. But the experience is what I think we're going to miss more than anything, and the leadership as well, a little bit as well, over the coming weeks, however long he's out for. That's the bit. That's not to say Gomez isn't experienced or isn't a good leader and all that sort of stuff, but someone like Andy Robbo, somebody of that calibre and that ilk, you can't not miss, yeah, regardless of form in a way.
Yeah, I said ever since Robbo actually returned from injury that my first choice left back is Joe Gomez, and it stayed that way, and yeah, it's not going to change right now, to be perfectly honest. And a lot of people weren't happy with me for that, but I think Joe Gomez has earned the shirt.
That's so. Not a slight on Joe Gomez. They're not happy though. I think that's just more remembering Andy Robbo.
It's Andy Robbo, yeah, totally get that. But Joe Gomez has been exceptional.
Best left back in the world, isn't he? On his day. What does that leave us then in terms of the bench, thinking about it? So
Jones, Gravenberch,
Elliott,
Gakpo. Probably a Bobby Clark on there, I would imagine. Tsimikas, not named in
Kwanzaa.
The 11. Joel Kwanzaa.
It's getting better, that, isn't it?
It's getting much better, that.
Mm. Excellent. Yeah. Okay, cool. Like that. What do you think? Let us know in the comments. Is there any wild indifferences you feel there towards our starting 11? Do let us know. Don't forget to drop a like on this if you're listening on podcasts and apps. Leave a 5-star review as well. And yes, it doesn't really end. Normally there's a nice delineation between this and the bias, but obviously we really want to talk more about Arsenal and Man City as well. So do come over to redmenplus.com and sign up. We're going to go probably in about 10 minutes pretty much straight after this doing Bias Football Pod, so head over there, sign up and check that one out as well. Guys, thank you so much, and we'll see you so soon.
Up the lads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.